Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Dog Bone Podcast. This one is, I'm going to let you in on something, I guess, in this podcast episode. It's something that I don't necessarily think we keep it as a secret or have kept it as a secret. In fact, we really haven't, but I haven't been real open about it. I haven't been real, haven't been talking about it a lot outside of the folks that I know and kind of inside my inner circle. But I'm on maternity watch right now, and we have Callie, who has been, Callie's a dog that I trained a couple years ago. She's four right now, and she's this yellow female, and we did a series on her. We did a series called Callie Keep On. I wrote a column for Gun Dog Magazine about her. Very, very nice dog. Really well bred. Just a, if you wanted to define what I'm looking for in dogs, she ticks a lot of the boxes. So she belongs to a friend of ours who's been a client, and I've trained, I think, four dogs for her. This will be the fifth one if we end up training a puppy from her for him. She has a pedigree that, if you look at it, it's a lot of the dogs that I really like. They go back to some pretty foundational dogs that over the years now, we've bred to those lines. We have dogs out of some of those lines, bought some dogs out of those lines. And that's something that took me probably, realistically, it probably took me 15 years and a whole bunch of different dogs to really get a feel for an understanding for specific styles that you see relatively consistently out of certain dogs. And so for a lot of people, that isn't going to matter. Like, I don't think that every person who gets a dog needs to know to that degree, that deep, that many generations back kind of thing. But for some, they'll totally relate to this and understand it. And I think people are drawn to certain styles of dogs. And I think that comes from matching a lot of things up. And some of that is their hunting styles, training styles, and lifestyles. And we've talked about that in other podcasts. And this is a line that kind of fits that. Now, with Callie, with the breeding, we did something a little bit different. And that's kind of what I was going to talk about today was, so it's something I've never done before. But because of the circumstances, we decided to do it. We bred her. So she comes from a kennel called Riverview Farm. And in my opinion, and I've talked about this before too, and I talked about this a lot when we first got Callie, was what a great job they do. They're here in the States. And they have really, really nice dogs. I would go out on a limb and say, and I don't know how far out on the limb I'm really going, but I would say they have some of the finest dogs in the States. Again, matching up to what I like and my desires as far as style of the dog. So she comes from a dog that comes from a line of dogs that, and I'm going to try not to get too deep into the weeds with the genetics parts of it, but there are a few names you're going to hear throughout this. One of them is a line called Ragweeds. And that's a dog that you've heard me talk about, a dog named Bailey. Bailey's going to come up in this conversation as well, because we've done some breeding to frozen straws of Bailey. We bred our Ellie to Bailey. We bred our Spry to Bailey and had puppies out of them and really like them. We'll talk about that a little bit more. I have Bella. Bella was a dog that belonged to a client. We just bred Bella. I'm training a couple of her puppies right now, and we've trained a bunch of them. And out of the nine puppies that we had, most of them were either trained by myself or the guy I partnered with on the litter, Noah Parson. And he had the sire to that dog, which is out of a Bailey's line. So again, I'm trying not to get too deep into the dog lines here, but, Bella was a Bailey puppy. She's a Bailey daughter. So that line is in this, and it's a few generations back, but it comes from that Ragweeds travel dog. And then there's another dog in this line that is called Mediterranean Blue. And there's another dog that's a son of his named Delfleet Neon of Fendawood. And that shows up quite a bit, I would say, pretty consistently through this. So with Callie, I decided a while back, and I was talking with Noah about it, and Noah had some experience. So one of the things that's really challenging for me when it comes to breeding dogs or making decisions when it comes to breeding dogs is the fact that a lot of them I don't know. I don't know them personally. Now you can see them on paper, and that's there's value in that, and it's important. But even that way, just knowing that they came out of specific litter, I've come to know it more and more, and most people will agree, I think, at the idea of just because they're out of a specific litter doesn't necessarily mean they're the same. And so there's a variety of puppies that come out, and there are certain ones that I would say are better for me than others out of certain litters. Now, one of our goals and one of my goals when it comes to breeding is to try to minimize the variation. I like consistency. I think consistency is something that's really important. And I do think that it is somewhat predictable at times, but it's always unpredictable. And that's, you know, I feel like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I am, because that's just the way it is. And I think that when it comes to breeding these dogs, it is such a balance of science and art. And I lean more towards the art side than the science, because I know there are ways to break it down from a science standpoint, but it never is true. It's never always true. It's never always going to be true. So when we start talking about Callie, I saw a dog on paper that I was drawn to, and it came from where I got Bailey, the Bailey breedings, kennel, Fenderwood Kennels. It's out in England. And I saw a dog that he had. It was a yellow dog named Cash, and David Latham was trialing with that dog. I think he made it to the IGL. He didn't, not this year, but the year before. He's not a real old dog. He was born in 2019, so he's 5 years old. Gonna be 5 years old. He's 4 years old right now. And when I saw, I really liked the look of the dog. I liked what I had heard about the dog. Again, there's only so much you can put into what you hear, because it all depends on who you hear it from, and there's things that get lost in translation. But what I really was sold on was when I talked with Noah about that dog. He sent me some pictures right away. And I said, "Where'd you get these?" And he said, "Well, I spent some time with them." So Noah knew him. Noah knew his brothers. Noah sent me some pictures of his brothers and him. And what he told me about the dog really kind of solidified my guesses or my assumptions. So I ended up, I did get some breedings from him and paired this Cash to Callie. So, and he's a yellow dog as well. I don't make decisions on color when it comes to breeding at all, but there are preferences that people have. And Tom, who owns Callie, he likes yellow, and he that's all he'll ever get from me is a yellow dog, and that's fine. It's totally a preference thing. But if I was going to breed his dog, he would like a puppy out of it, and he wants a yellow dog. So I did have that in the back of my mind. It wasn't a decision maker, but it was something that I kept in mind, and it works in this scenario. Hopefully, I say that because on paper you can say it all you want, and they could all come out black puppies, but we'll see. Now, what I did that was, so pairing those two wasn't that hard of a decision after I talked with Noah about it and got more information about the dog Cash, and I also got some information about Cash from David, and I liked what I heard, and I liked how they laid out, and there are some similarities in these lines. Callie's lines has Mediterranean blue in it. Callie's lines has a little bit of ragweeds travel. It's back a ways. Delfleet Neon is in Callie. And so when I look back up at Cash has ragweeds travel. He's got Mediterranean blue. He doesn't have Delfleet Neon, but he's got a dog named Ale. Ale is a field trial champion that another field trial champion that David Latham had made up. There's another field trial champion on the bottom side that I don't know much about, but I did some Google searching and I found some pretty interesting information about. It's a dog named Dunamora U coming from a dog that's Diablo of Glenlock. And that's where I dug up some information on that. Producing, pretty good producing historically. Now that's 4 or 5 generations back, but it's in there. So when I looked at those and I talked to Noah, it kind of confirmed, and again, this is all on hunch because I did not see the dog, but I like these, I think I like this pairing. Now, this is where it gets a little bit weird, is when I decided to do this, we've bred frozen AI in the past. We've done it with Bailey a few times. And no matter what the dog, no matter what the potency of the sperm, no matter what the age of the dogs, I do think all of that stuff matters. More and more, I feel it now than ever, but that it matters. But with Callie, she's not a real old dog. She's 4 years old, so relatively healthy as far as in her prime. Never had a litter before. With Cash, she's not real old either, at 4 years old. And the motility, like they give you this post-motility percentage, and it was pretty good. He had like a 65% post-thaw motility, and which is not bad. It ended up when they actually thawed the semen to be a little bit higher. They felt like it was closer to 70%, which is pretty good actually. So when that happened, that made me feel pretty good. But all these things taken into consideration, when you buy a breeding unit, there's just not that much, not in comparison to live cover as far as volume of sperm. So when you start talking about breeding the frozen AI, your timing's got to be perfect. And so we're going through a lot of progesterone testing to try to hit the absolute perfect ovulation time in that female, because you want to maximize the opportunity for her to get pregnant. And so you're putting in a smaller amount of semen and you're putting it in at a lower percentage of survival, and it's only got a shortened window of life, basically. It's got like a 24-hour window, basically, for it to fertilize eggs. So you take all those things into consideration, and your likelihood of success with breeding drops dramatically when you try to do it this way. Now, it's not the most economical way to do it. It's not the most efficient as far as success. But for me, the reason I choose to do things, what I would say is very much the hard way when it comes to this, is because to me, that's my best opportunity to create the type of dog that I'm looking for. So it just comes down to, I'm not saying it's right or wrong how anybody does it. In fact, maybe we're doing it wrong just because it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially from a number standpoint. But the financial drive is just not there for me when it comes to breeding dogs. I'm really looking to try to get the best dog for myself. And so when we chose to do this, we dramatically decrease our chances of success. And I've gone through that a couple times with litters that haven't taken, with very small litters. I'll call them all success, just because we learned stuff from it. But we also had some success with some of these small litters because I got very much what I wanted. And so that's where this comes in. So I had never heard of this myself, but I talked to the few people that did it. It came at recommendation of a friend of mine, the friend who owns Cali, and because they're into some horses, some real high-end horses. And he said, you know, you ever think about breeding like a second male to her? And I said, geez, I don't know that I could do that. So I researched it a little bit, and you certainly can do it. It's a multi-sired litter. Does get registered through the AKC. A lot more hoops you got to jump through. There's DNA testing involved. And so what we ended up doing was I looked at it. I decided, you know what? There are, and I talked with some people. We work with a veterinary clinic called Lemyra. It's called Veterinary Village, and Dr. Marty Greer is a reproductive specialist, and she's really got a lot of really good information. I listened to a podcast that she did about multi-sired litters, actually, that was excellent. So I would search it out if you guys are interested in learning more about it. But they're really good at what they do when it comes to the reproductive, maybe the best in the country, and so I talked with them about this and explained to them my scenario. And in my case, I think it made sense with the idea of using Frozen with this, with all the stuff that I just talked about. But then what we did was we came back. And so we had, when we bred Bailey, we had two small litters. But we had one male, and we had a male out of each litter that I trained, one of them, Blue, and we documented that. And there's a series out there on Blue, and you can see him. One of my favorites, just an excellent, excellent dog. Just a, turned out exactly how I like. If I could duplicate him, I would. I sold him to a very good friend of mine, with the agreement that when he turned two, I'd be able to get him certified and have the opportunity to potentially breed to him if I found the right pairing. And so that was what we did with Blue. And then another male out of another litter, so he's a half brother to Blue, is a dog named Chief. So Chief is out of our Spry, Blue is out of our Ellie, both sired by Bailey. And Chief is a dog that I didn't have as much training touch on. Like, I didn't touch him hardly at all. He belongs to my son, who is in college, and he's finishing up his last year in college this spring. And so Chief was his first dog. And Chief was raised in college, in a college house. And my son's a duck hunter and hunts a little bit of everything, but big into duck hunting, and trained him as a gun dog. And he, admittedly, and I don't say this to knock him at all, but he's not a real big trainer. He doesn't do a lot of training. He's come to some of our workshops. He brought Chief to our workshop, and I know he's put a lot of time into him, but I don't know if I would say he's put a lot of training into him. He's put a lot of time into him in that he lives with them and he hunts with them and he does everything with them. And it's a lot, it reminds me a lot of me when I got my first lab when I was in college and didn't really know what I was doing. But despite that, the dog turned out really well. Well, Chief is a perfect example of that. For the little amount of training that he's received on like a level of skilled trainer's perspective, the dog is phenomenal and such a sponge and so smart and so inherent and natural with everything he does. So I look at Blue, who's his half brother, who I trained, and I feel like I've put quite a bit of good things into, and he was very natural and he was very easy to train. And I look at Chief and I look at the results of these two dogs, and neither one of them are like, I wouldn't call them super high level from a competition training standpoint, because we don't do that. But I would say they are as nice of a dog as you're ever going to hunt over with relatively little effort put into them. And that goes back to the genetics. And so could they be trained to an extremely high level? Absolutely. They have all the capability of that. They have all the traits for that. But without that need to train them at a super high level, they're phenomenal dogs. I like that. So I'm more interested in what a dog can do naturally when it comes to making breeding decisions than it is to how well are they trained. And I think that gets lost sometimes, because I think we breed a lot of times to dogs, and we have to be careful about that. I have to be careful about that, is understanding if a dog is so good that it wins stuff. That's how we measure stuff when it comes to dogs, is we're winning competitions and we're doing competitive type things. I think what doesn't necessarily always get taken into consideration is what did it take to get to that level? And so for me and for our clients and for what I'm interested in doing with our dogs, which is why I make the decisions I make, and ultimately that's why clients make the decisions they make to get dogs from us, it's not because of what the dog has accomplished because of its training. It's oftentimes really heavily weighted on what does the dog have inside of it without the trainer's influence. And so long circle back. So I started researching this multi-sired litter, and I looked at, because I had access. And we had, so when Chief is about 6 months older than Blue, and so I had, because I knew I had an interest in these two dogs, I got their health certifications done. So both their, and I own their moms. So again, this is this, And Ellie is a third generation of ours. So Blue's like a fourth gen. Blue would be a fourth generation. Spry is a Spry would be a third generation of ours because that's a Taylor puppy. And so Chief is a third generation. Is that right? Yep. Taylor, Spry. So Chief is a third. So I knew that these from a background perspective, I knew those dogs very well that led up to Chief and Blue. And so we got their hips and elbows done. Elbows were normal, hips were excellent. Not a surprise because both the moms were excellent, both the grandmas were excellent. So I felt really good about it from a health perspective. But I really like what they brought from a training perspective. And if you guys have followed us over the years, you know how highly I speak of our dogs, Spry, Ellie, Taylor. Well, those three are the makeup of these two. So what I ended up doing was I took Chief, I actually went and got Chief, and I brought Chief back. And so when we did the progesterone on Callie and we got to the peak estrus, her ovulation was prime. What they do is they go 3 days. So post ovulation, 3 days, and we did the AI with the frozen. And so, and we did a TCI. So it was like inserted into where it needed to go. 24 hours later, which I went over and got Chief, brought him back. We did a fresh collection on Chief. And so we collected at the clinic, and then we did a TCI. So basically collected and did the artificial back-to-back days. And what it did for us, hopefully, was ink. The reason I did it was because I didn't want to go through all the stuff we've gone through to this point and end up putting all of our eggs necessarily into Cash's basket. I have not bred to Cash yet. I've not used his frozen before. I do have a few breedings, but this is the first one. And my thought was, if it's gonna take, it'll take, because you have that 24-hour window. And this was the conversation I had with the breeding specialist was, you know, breed to that dog at the absolute peak time. Give it 24 hours. Because she can still get pregnant beyond that window, obviously, but you give him the most prime real estate. You give him the best time. Then backing it up 24 hours later, you take a dog. And the reason people do this is, for me, the reason I did it is because I would have been happy, quite honestly, I think, with either one of those litters. If Cash were to take or Chief were to take, I'd have bred either one of them to her. I really wanted to breed Cash to him. To her, so I did. I decided to use Chief as a backup because they're genetically not that close. They're certainly far enough apart to be genetically tested separate. But what'll end up happening is if the Cash litter didn't take, if we tried with that frozen and it didn't take, we still have a second chance to have her pregnant with Chief 24 hours later. Now, there is a chance that there could be puppies in there from both of the sires, which would be, I mean, I'm getting greedy if I start picking and choosing that way, but wish, you know, you can make all the wishes you want, I guess. If I had my absolute ideal, what I would say is it would be nice to have puppies out of both Cash and Chief, because I would be very curious to see which ones I liked. Which, if I liked one more than the other, if there was any type of tell that way as far as making decisions going forward, if we were to do a repeat breeding. And so you're kind of getting you're increasing your chances by using fresh collected semen as a backup. You're increasing your chances of potentially having a larger litter. Going back to those frozens that we did with Bailey, we had two litters of two. Which is a lot of it's a lot of work, and it's actually hard on the mom. We had to have a C-section with the second one because the puppies got so big, we just weren't comfortable with doing the live whelping. So there's a lot that goes into this decision making that after thinking about it, I thought we're gonna try it. We did, and so what we end up doing now is so that happened. Then you cross your fingers. We found out that she was pregnant. Which was real relief. So we did the ultrasound. We got that. And then what we did was, in order to do this, you do DNA swabs. So you do DNA swabs of mom, you do a DNA swab of both dads. You send that off to the AKC to get put into their records. Then when the puppies are born, we'll take DNA swabs of each puppy and submit that to the AKC. Then they'll come back and tell us which puppies belong to which sire. Now, I've talked with a couple of people who have done this since kind of investigating it. And it's interesting because after we decided to do it, I talked to a couple of them. And the folks, I talked to two people that have done it, and both of them got puppies all from one sire. Neither one of them got a mixed litter. Now, it does happen. It can happen. But it'll be interesting to see. I'd love to see it for myself. But fast forward, we're due this week. She's actually due. I'm recording this on a Monday. She's due on a Wednesday. We were just to the vet on Friday, did the x-ray, and she does have a smaller litter. She's expected to have 5 pups. And so I look at that and I go, there was a time in my life when I was younger, I would have went, it's only 5 pups. And I probably, admittedly, thought that for a split second when I was sitting in the vet clinic. But then I thought back and I remembered we had a couple litters of 2. We had a litter that we lost of 3 prior to that. We had a litter that didn't take prior to that. Those are the last 4 litters over the last 3 or 4 years now. And so for that brief second where I felt a little bit, she only has 5, I thought, oh my God, she's got 5. What I will never allow myself to do is feel that way again, because every puppy we get is so special and means so much. And healthy puppies is what my mind has changed to. So now I cross my fingers for 5 healthy puppies. And our Lillian is betting at 6. She thinks the vet was wrong. So Lillian's 5 years old. So she does know everything. But and maybe she's right. Maybe there will be an extra puppy in there. That'd be great if there was. If there isn't, that's fine. But my mom actually used to have a kennel and raised golden retrievers for many, many years. She's retired now and no longer does it. But I've talked her out of retirement because I admittedly get some anxiety when it comes to this stuff. This is not my thing. The puppies are not my thing. And so I have talked my mom into coming out of retirement. She's going to give us a hand whelping the litter. I'm pretty excited about it. Lillian is very excited about it. She's 5. And I think that this is a memory that she will have, doing this with me and her mom and my mom. And, we're pretty excited about it. If you're a person of prayer, I'd ask that you keep us in mind. But we are going to be expecting those pups this week. I don't know when Ben's going to go live with this. He might go live with it right before the puppies are born. But if not, it would be right after. And then I'm sure we're going to do a follow-up podcast episode because I want to share the results to this. We haven't shared any of this stuff on social media yet. And it's not because I'm trying to be a secretive about it. I just don't want to jinx things and I don't want to assume things. And I always tell people, literally, we're not counting chickens till they're hatched here. The puppies are going to be spoken for. I do get people to reach out and ask, you know, do you sell puppies? I always say no, not really. Occasionally we will have puppies. Occasionally we will have puppies. We do take a list of folks that are interested. I just don't take deposits and we don't guarantee anything because we'll never make a decision to breed because we have to get someone a puppy. It's just always so has to be such a right fit for us to breed and it has to be a right pairing. And I just don't want to allow decisions to be made when it comes to breeding dogs and having puppies that are not the decision is made solely because I feel like it's the right breeding to do. And again, it goes back to selfishly for myself. Other people benefit, I think, from it because I certainly can't keep them all. I would if I could, but Steph will not allow that. But these puppies, I say that, and the list of folks that I is much longer than five right now. But we don't know until these puppies are born. We don't know if they're boys or girls. We don't know what colors they're going to be. So don't, if you hear this, don't, I would say, don't send a message asking for availability, because there won't be any. But if you do have an interest in a puppy and you're serious about it, I would say you could reach out to me and talk with me, because that's what I would want to do. I would want you to understand how we do it. Most of the puppies that we have are going to be trained by us or by someone I know, at least for a while. That's the way we make decisions as far as what we do in the future with some of our breedings. And a perfect example of that is the last litter that we have. We bred Bella to Boone, who is Noah's dog, and both of them are really good, really nice dogs. I've decided I'm not going to repeat that breeding. The puppies were not as consistent as I had hoped. Some of them were exactly what I wanted, and some of them are not exactly what I wanted. And when I say that, the good part about not exactly what I wanted is it's almost too much of a good thing. And part of it comes from, and I'm not going to get into this on this one, but I will maybe another day, is some of the stuff we do from a decision standpoint when it comes to breeding within the line. And so maybe we'll get into it a little bit, but so everything I do is, I would say there's line breeding involved with it. And the reason is because I have felt over the years, the best dogs I've come across, they always are line bred to some degree. And the reason I think that is because they're really strong in certain traits. And that's what I'm looking for when I do breed, and that's what I'm looking for when I look to buy a dog. Really, really predictable with certain traits. And I think you can accomplish that with good line breeding. I think the risk that comes in is that because of what line breeding can do with emphasizing traits, I think you have to be extremely careful, because if there are any holes in the dog in particular that stand out, that we'll call it an undesirable, if there's anything undesirable with that dog from a genetic standpoint, if you line breed with it, to it, the likelihood of emphasizing the undesirable is just as good as the desirable. And that's something that can get a little risky, because now you can create strength and traits in the wrong direction. So it's really hard. Not every dog should be line bred. There's no question about that. And not every dog should be bred, period. But some dogs, and this is where the art can come in, can have holes. They all have holes. That's the thing, is my dogs all have little things that I could pick apart with them. But for the most part, if a dog is something that I would like to breed to, it doesn't have much for holes. And if it does have a hole, it's not something that is a deal breaker for one reason or another. And that, again, that's where the art, I think, really comes into this. But I look at with the litter that we did with Bella and Boone, we got really emphasized traits with some of them. And that trait that is too much for me, because it's not a negative, it's not an undesirable trait to me. It's just, it's too much of a desirable trait. And that is, and you've heard me talk about it with this puppy Rain that I'm training right now. She is so, so calm and so relaxed and so, she's so I use the word soft as a very desirable thing. She's that. They're all that. They all were that. She's sensitive. And when I say sensitive, I define sensitive as being, it's too much. It's too soft. She's too sensitive, so that I've had to be extremely patient with her. Now, is she going to be good? Yeah, I think she's going to be just fine. But what the difference between, let's say, her and her sister Millie, who Millie was really what I like in a dog. There was another one that I trained named Cece. Cece was really what I like in a dog. I call them a little more ambitious. Like, they, you could you could put a little more on their plate, and they handled it pretty well. And they were also very soft, did not take much pressure, had extreme, they just had really natural traits that I liked. And Rain has those as well. But with Rain, I'm doing stuff at 12 months that I was doing with her sister at 8 or 9 months. And I look at that and I remind myself and I hear myself say that and I go, you idiot, it's only 3 or 4 months. Yeah, that's true. I had to be more patient with this dog. The reason but Rain was not the only one. Rain's has a brother, two brothers were very similar to that. And so now I keep in touch with all of these puppies and I know the traits and I know the things that all these puppies are. And of the 9, I would say four of them were on the side of like, they were just a little more sensitive than what I would want. And so where did they get that from? That's what I have to look at. Well, their dad is a much more abrasive. He takes a lot more pressure. Their mom took a lot more pressure, Bella. Bella and Boone are what I like. When you combine the two of them, we got a little bit too much of what I like to the point where now I don't like that. So if that makes sense, 5 out of the 9, I would say that's what we want. 4 out of the 9, a little too much. So what do I say? We're not going to breed that. I'm not. So I decided I've got another dog that I found. This is where the value of seeing the actual dogs comes into play. This last year, I was with a guy, a friend of mine, who has a dog that was imported. I spent 3 or 4 days with him. And he reminded me so much of Bella and Boone. Like, mannerism, disposition, full of hunt, great style. A little different looking. Little shorter-nosed, little square-faced, which I like. Nice looking dog, but just slightly different. Built really well. Everything I liked about him. So he's completely an outcross. He's not related, but he has so many similar characteristics. He acts just like these dogs that I like. And so what we're going to do is we're going to pair him to Bella. And that will be hopefully, because I know that, because I saw that dog, that's what gave me the confidence. If I had just seen it on paper, I don't know that I would have been that crazy about it because I don't know those dogs in that pedigree. Well, that's the downside of it, is I don't necessarily know those dogs in the pedigree. So you go back beyond him, I don't know much about them. They're in Ireland. But because I saw him, that's what gives me the confidence in, let's try that. So a little bit of a side note there on some, but it gives you an insight of what I'm thinking about when I'm trying to make decisions as far as direction to go with the breeding. And again, this really isn't part of the business. And so the decisions that are made with this are very different. And so I'm not saying that anything that how other people do it is right or wrong. It's just how we do it and what our thought process is behind it. But all that being said, I've got a whelping box set up in our mudroom. Callie is in it. Her temperature is good. We're waiting for it to drop here in the next day or two. And then we will hopefully bring in a bunch of healthy puppies. But I'll share that with you guys as we go. I appreciate you listening. I always appreciate the support with this podcast. This one's a little bit different. So I maybe apologize for that. If you don't like this type of podcast, if you're more into the training questions, I have a bunch of those too to get to. So thank you guys for your support. Please do me a favor, if you would, wherever you listen to the podcast, if you could leave us a rating. What that does for us is it really helps us be able to get in front of more people that are looking for this type of podcast. And so ultimately, that's our goal with the podcast, is help as many people as we can with their dogs. So appreciate your support. Thanks for listening. And we'll continue to record. And I look forward to hopefully recording a follow-up on this one. I think it's going to be pretty exciting.